Well, good morning, or good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRT LP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. We live online at kdrt.org. I'm Bill Buchanan. Thank you for tuning in today. My guest today is Seb Onyate. He is the editor of the Davis Enterprise, which is the local newspaper news organization that was founded in 1897. Which means it'll be 125 years old next year in 2022. But we're going to talk today about local journalism, what's happening to news and news audiences and more. Seb, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
I will add at the start that the Enterprise is owned by the McNaughton family of Davis. And I used to work for a different McNaughton newspaper, the one in Fairfield, as an editor and reporter in the last century, basically. It's been a while. Anyway, Seb, could you start just by describing a typical workday for you in 2021? I mean, do you meet with staff? Do you edit stories? How does it go?
We're super dispersed now in the pandemic age. Most of the reporters are working on their stories either at their homes or on location where they need to be there. So usually I come in on a production day. I'll come in pretty late, starting at about 1 p.m. And then I go through my email. It's almost all through phone calls and text messages and the occasional Zoom meeting and round up what's going to be in the next day's paper. And then it's working through the nuts and bolts of gathering the stories, they will email them to me or upload them directly into our content management system. And from there, I move them onto the pages and send the pages to the printer. And by about midnight that night, everything gets out for the next day.
Okay. And of course, embedded in all that are all the conversations I imagine that you're having with reporters. Mm-hmm. I imagine with news sources, at least I know from my time at newspapers, people pitch stories. And so you've got that dialogue going on all the time as well.
Absolutely. And in a town engaged as Davis, there's a lot of ideas out there. People see things going on and they think of us first. It's great. And they'll tell me, I saw this, I saw construction, what's going on. I saw the city is not responding to my request for this thing. We know what's happening. So the super engaged citizenry means, my phone's ringing a lot and I'm getting all sorts of ideas from the community.
So how is the Enterprise doing?
It's rough. We are intimately tied with the health of retail in this town. Most of our advertising comes either from local businesses, local real estate, that sort of thing. And they're hurting. The downtown's been packed for the last week as the students come back, and hopefully that indicates better times are ahead. But it's just, we're just connected to the health of this town. And right now, like a lot of places, it's suffering from pandemic-induced, lack of activity.
Yeah. We should explain the traditional model for community newspaper, financial model was, well, a lot of media. Advertising paid most of the bills. You charge something for circulation to actually get the paper at your house. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the editorial department, my organization is supposed to be independent, cover the news as they see it. But so when the business sector is down, when they're not advertising as much, obviously that's a big hit. And then, of course, on top of that, the newspaper industry itself has been going through tremendous changes. Social media took away a lot of the ad revenue, took away a lot of the audiences. Many people seem happy reading free news instead of paying for it. It seems newspapers can't be what they were, but they aren't yet what they will be, which is to say they're sort of between physical and maybe digital.
That's a great way of putting it. Okay. We're definitely in the transition phase. We are still working on the physical model, and I think a lot of us are nostalgic for that. And there's still a lot of our customers that love getting physical paper, but more and more it's online, and like you said, through social. And we got a tremendous boost in online engagement during the pandemic. People really started searching us out and looking for the Enterprise first online there.
What are your numbers these days? I mean, what paid circulation, and you've also got online. How do you add that up? What does it work out to?
Well, like you said, I'm kept away from the business decisions. So circulation is still in the 7,000 to 9,000 range.
And those are paid print subscribers,
right? Exactly.
And some newsstand sales too, I suppose.
Yes, but okay. Well, mostly it's subscriptions. Newsstands are a little bit on top. My understanding on the website is that it's been growing steadily throughout the pandemic. More and more people are jumping on the online bandwagon.
So people are getting news online. And of course, ultimately, the whole thing is likely to move there, including the advertising. And it's the business side of the operation, not the news side. But I guess what I'm looking for is, are you guys doing okay? I know You guys had some cuts, but how are you doing?
Yeah, we're surviving. It's fairly stable from what I understand. And like, you know, I don't see the revenue coming in, but I do see how many ads are in the paper. So that's given me a little bit of encouragement. I feel like we've got some stability on that side. It's been a rough couple of years now.
You've got 4 news reporters. Is my math right on that?
Yes, 4 full-time news reporters.
Okay, 4 full-time.
Right.
Well, I know that's a lot less than it used to be, but that's a lot more than a lot of papers this size mm-hmm. have now. Occasionally, I'll go look at the staff sites of different papers. I've looked at the one at Woodland, for example, and mm-hmm. I can't quote that number offhand, but I think they've got just a handful of people. And you've got news and still got a sports editor and photographer. Mm-hmm. There's a story that, you know, community journalism, people tend to think it's going away. It's interesting, though. There's a couple of advantages that you have. And I want to preface, I don't mean this to be boosterism or, you know, looking at the world through rose-colored glasses. But there are a couple of things that community journalism does that people still want. And that is partly just the very local news. The Pointer website had an article, they were talking about it, pumpkin journalism. And I guess that's sort of a seasonal reference to say the local paper is the one that will tell you if you've got a pumpkin weighing contest in your town, who won and what the weight was and things mm-hmm. like that. In your case, if you cover what you do in Davis, plus you gather a lot of news and information in one place.
Right.
Now, that's weighed against the fact that California is a sort of a transitory place. A lot of people come here from all over. It's a strength of the state, but what it means in terms of journalism is people might land in Davis and they may not think that they're going to be here all that long, particularly for college students. What I'm wondering is, you know, the traditional news diet for our community paper is things like local government and schools and sports and you know, events, press releases, some columns, things like that. How do you reach people who don't have those sense of connections in Davis?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Specifically, the college students has always been a challenge for us. If they're interested in news at all, they're more interested in what's going on back home, where they're from. So that's always been an effort to reach people on campus. And so because of that, we have pretty robust campus coverage. And we make sure that we are covering things going on the university that the students are interested in. Also, even though they're transitory, we find that the people who come to work for the university, the staff and the professors, are very interested in laying down roots and getting involved in a local community. I think that's one thing where we're very lucky as a newspaper, is that people come here and they almost immediately get taken in by the Davis vibe, and they're going down to the farmer's market, they're getting their kids into soccer, and people plug in really quickly here. And that benefits us because they want to know what we have. They want to know the city council meetings and school board meetings and that sort of thing. So we're lucky in that regard. The students are a little harder to reach, but they're interested in the campus coverage, and we have that for them.
Editors and reporters have to work quickly, particularly at the local paper, and more so increasingly, I think, at the metros, although I just don't know that as well. The big papers, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this demand pushes journalists to go for the quick story, the familiar subject, sometimes the usual sources and perspectives. And some of the freshest, most important journalism, however, takes a while to develop. How do you find the time to do that in Davis? Can you do that in Davis?
It's easier now for us. We some years ago, we reduced the number of papers we did per week. We used to be 6 a week. Now we're down to 3. And so that gives the reporters more time. They are able to let things develop. Just knowing that the next deadline is 3 days away, they can really dig in, make calls, make sure they got the right people going, and call friends of friends. It's, you know, get solid on all the sourcing.
I remember, and this is when your staff was a little bigger several years ago, and I don't know if it was Jonathan Edwards, one of mm-hmm. your former reporters, who wrote a story about the graveyard shift in Davis.
Right.
Sort of a feature story that just said, here's all these different things that are going on overnight. And, you know, I thought that was kind of interesting. And it's the kind of a thing that tends to get squeezed out by current conditions. Now, not just Davis, but all over I'm talking about now. Because it takes a while to develop a story like that. You know, it's not as quick a thing to develop as, say, a crime story or an agenda mm-hmm. story. And I think people are interested in that. But what do you see? I mean, what sort of stories get the most engagement with the enterprise?
It's, frankly, I mean, it's crime. People love yeah. clicking on the crime stories. And then local government. Again, everybody's super engaged here. And anything the city council does, there's just a really heavy response. Everybody wants to know what the latest vote was, what the latest argument was. You know, Right now, it's Sutter Hospital is they're having to cut down some trees to put up solar panels, and everybody got worked up over that. And that was two solid weeks of people really being interested in that story.
And so they stayed with that story.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And they want the updates. They want what's next. What's the latest decision? Because there was, you know, several city commissions involved, and then the city council itself. And at every stage, they're into it. And again, that's a Davis thing. That's something that we're lucky to have. People want what we have, you know, and that's a fortunate thing for us.
The Pointer site also had a story about a study, black and white and undead all over. It's sort of a pun on the old idea of what's black and white and red all over, you know, these newspapers. Mm-hmm. But it was about community journalism. And it talked about, I guess, what we were saying a little bit earlier, that there's an interest in community journalism that didn't, well, I'll just read it. A confluence of political, economic, and journalistic root causes have created a perfect storm for the resurrection of community journalism at the hyper-local level. There's more here than I can summarize, but it said that the basic idea is that local news and a strong local news organization, when using new tools to diversify their income, can do okay financially, plus help a community endure. It goes on to talk about a connection between sort of the uniqueness of local economic systems and the strength of a paper, partly with the idea that, you know, if the paper's doing well, or if there's a news organization is doing well, the town tends to do well. Now, people might interpret that as boosterism, you know, that let's boost the local whatever. But I think it's a way of saying that when people are really engaged, there's something there to work with. But I guess what I'm wondering is, you're describing Davis as a very engaged town. Do you think the substance is still there to sort of keep the paper going as a community paper?
Yes, I think it is. It's sort of like it's a sign of a healthy ecosystem. If the community is, that engagement is a sign of the community, you know, having the spare time to think about these issues. You know, if everybody is unemployed and worrying about the next paycheck, is, I think, stuff like school board bonds and trees in hospital parking lots, you know, that's less important to people. But because Davis is doing relatively well compared to other communities, and the community's more engaged with each other, and that means they're going to be more engaged with us, means they're going to be more engaged with the government, with the schools. And it's just, so having the good local media, I think, is at the very least a sign that the community is doing well.
Right. We are talking with Seb Onyate. He is the editor of the Davis Enterprise. I'm Bill Buchanan. This is Davis Phil on KDRT. So what methods and channels and such are you using to reach people online now? We've been talking about the print side of it, but how about the online side?
So we have our own website, which is itself has like an email newsletter attached to it. So you can send them to get the top stories emailed straight to you. I think they usually come out about 10 a.m. every morning. We have an active Twitter account, and most of our reporters and editors are on Twitter, you know, pushing stories. And then there's Facebook, which is a big driver. People like to put Facebook down, but that delivers engagement like few other platforms do. And we have a very lively kind of Facebook community around the paper. Every time I put something on Facebook, I mean, immediately it gets good churn. And names I recognize, people that I know are local, are getting the thing delivered there. So those three outlets, I think, have really helped us reach the local community online.
And as you have a Twitter account yourself. Sometimes, you know, community editors will have a column. I used to write one myself. I look at your Twitter feed and it's very pithy. It's sharp. It's largely about sports. And I meant to ask if that's something you do mostly for fun, or sounds like maybe it's part of an engagement strategy for everybody there.
Yeah, it started out just me messing around. And then we found that there was some good cross-pollination going with the official account, and then the other reporters jumped in. And that seems to be the key, is to have as many... You get two or three people going and retweeting each other's things, and it just grows exponentially from there.
You do seem to post a lot about sports. Is that just sort of an interest of yours?
Yeah, that's kind of my outlet for. I do news all day, and so when I get home, it's how can I distract myself? It's, you know, and sports is one of the ways I do that, and a way too, I think, engaging with other people, because, you know, it's one of the I know if I start talking about baseball or football that other people are going to respond to that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, community engagement is usually part of the local editor's job too. I mean, you know, you sort of become a face of the paper. A different sort of a task in a pandemic, obviously, than it was before. Well, you've been editor now for about 4 years. I'm curious, has anything surprised you in the job? Something you didn't expect?
Just the sheer amount of time it took. It takes. People, you have to be available, you know, almost 24 hours. You know, if I'm awake, you can reach me. And people take that, you know, there's always something going on. There's always a new angle, somebody trying to reach me on some issue. And so that part of it, the it's not that there's never any downtime. It's that I don't know when it's coming. You know, I just have to always be available to people.
Yeah. It's irregular and fleeting.
Exactly.
The news business overall, one of the other complications is that people, it's a very divisive times. I mean, we could talk the whole half hour about that. A lot of that plays out in politics, national politics. It's playing out with the vaccine. I'm wondering if or how you're seeing it play out in Davis, not so much in the political divide. I mean, I imagine that's the same here as a lot of places. But part of the concern I think people have is that we collectively are pulling apart from each other. And I'm wondering if you're starting to see that in more local issues as well.
Davis is a pretty blue town. It's close to 70% Democratic, I think. And it's more that the people who are more conservative just feel, and they've expressed this to me, they just feel outnumbered and like they can't express themselves. And if they're worried, they always worry that if they say what's on their mind, they're gonna get jumped on and, you know, piled on by what they see as this sort of intolerant majority in a rather more progressive town. But I think too, there's a lot that don't mind expressing themselves, and they send me, you know, letters with their names on them. You know, they don't mind being known. But definitely that's the only sense of divisiveness that I get is that conservatives feel a bit intimidated by their lack of numbers here.
Okay, so you know, one of the staples of being a community editor is you'll get people calling and saying, "Oh, you got something all wrong." You know, that doesn't mean you necessarily did. Maybe you did, but not necessarily. I'm wondering if you're getting more of that because, well, like you can take the vaccine or take the 2020 presidential election. I mean, there is basic disagreement by some folks as to what even is true, what even happened. And that strikes me as something exaggerated from the past. But I was curious what you see.
Yeah, it people have their own facts now. And, you know, they'll write in and they'll call the complaint. And, you know, I just have to hold firm on, you know, this is an objective truth that certain things are happening and certain mandates have been put in place by the government. And when you say you're following the science, it's a very catchy phrase now, you got to take that to where it's going to lead you. And it's easier to do when you know you have the facts behind you. I think when it comes time to opinion, that can be rougher because people can be genuinely offended by something you said. And, you know, whether or not you meant it that way, they're still mad. When it comes to medical facts, as we're having with the pandemic, or when it comes to counting votes, I can point to the truth. I can say, look, you know, the virus does this, the vaccines do this. That's the facts. And we can stick with that. So that's an absolute defense. And that makes it easier to deal with people when you know the facts are with you.
And do you find in Davis people accept it? I mean, if someone takes the time to call you, they must be open to, you know, unless they just want to call it an ounce, they're probably open to some kind of a conversation.
I find generally they want to vent. And if there's a genuine, you know, thing, if there's generally something you didn't know and I can fill that in, then yes, they'll calm down and say, okay, well, that makes sense and we'll get through it. Other times they don't want to hear it. You know, they've made up their minds and they're upset that the facts are not agreeing with them, basically. Yeah. And so at that point, there's not a lot you can tell them just other than, all right, I hear you. I'll take it into consideration. Thanks, you know, thanks for calling.
I do think myself, a certain number of people want the media to affirm and not inform. Mm-hmm. It's not that they're against being informed, but sometimes what they want most is to be affirmed. And that's across the spectrum. That's not a left or right or Democrat or Republican or anything kind of perspective. You know, I wanted to call out one thing that that the paper does, I particularly think is kind of a neat community thing you do. And that's the hub page.
Mm.
This is the Davis High School journalism class puts together the hub for the paper for the Davis High School. And they have an online edition. These are basically people who want to be journalists when they're, or they want to think about it. And they print a paper, a page a week in the Enterprise. How did that come about?
That was Kelly Wilkerson, the journalism teacher at the high school. And she came to us at the beginning of the pandemic. They didn't know what they were going to do. They couldn't print a paper. They were having dispersed, you know, online classes. And so they came to us and our publisher, Taylor Bewley, and they worked out this deal where we would give them a page a week and they do it all themselves. And they send me the finished version and I make sure it's up to our standards, and credit to them. It usually is. It's for student journalists, they do great work.
I've thought for, you know, being at that stage of their lives, which is to say being teenagers starting out and all that, there's some work in there that is, you know, it's not just the obvious thing. It shows some sense of adventure and some sense of curiosity. You know, newsletters are a big thing among print media these days. I know the Enterprise has one. I was reading about 6 a.m. City. This is a group of local newsletters based in South Carolina. They're going to open one in Sacramento. This is also from Pointer. One thing I thought was interesting, the co-founder of this said, "We don't do investigative reporting. We steer completely clear of politics. Instead, they are heavy on news about small businesses and development, local events, the dining scene, charity, philanthropy, etc. That draws advertising interest in the local business community." Again, I'm quoting Pointer here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I think about that. I mean, competition, I think, is always good. I'm a little worried that some places, and I don't mean to critique 6 a.m. here particularly, but you know, they sort of want to put aside the difficult side of journalism, the part where you are maybe having to actually make people uncomfortable because you're saying something important. Again, that's not an ideological statement. That's across the board. And they want to go to the fun things, the you know, just the celebrations and all that, which have their place. You work in the business, you're a newspaper editor. Do you think we're going to keep our appetite for challenging news?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're missing a trick there in that the politics is what people want to read. Dining is great if you're going out, but you know, you can only read so many restaurant reviews, you know, before you run out of steam. Ultimately, the restaurant scene doesn't change that much, but politics is different every day. Crime's different every day.
Well, it is, although politics can get really old when it's a shouting match and when people are basically speaking the same things they always say and talking to the same groups they always talk to.
That's true. But locally, we have the advantage of, you know, there's always a new issue. There's always a new road that people want to block off or that needs to be repaved. Or there's always something, a new development that may or may not get built, you know, that sort of thing. So I hear that. I hear we only want to do restaurants and events. I mean, that's nice, but people want more than that. You know, I think the audience wants more than that.
I guess partly what's at work there is I think, you know, I mean, newspapers used to be monopolies for good or for bad. And as competitions come along, it's peeled away parts of that, you know, leaving the, what some would say, the boring parts behind and doing the lucrative parts someplace else. And of course, ultimately, it means the so-called boring parts maybe don't get done like they need to get done.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're coming near the end. I did note that next year, the Enterprise is 125 years old. That's about 10 years older than the UC campus, University of California, Davis campus. Anything planned? Any discussions? It's a little early yet, I suppose, but any discussions yet about observing that?
Possibly. You know, it depends maybe, you know, how much people are able to gather. It's less fun to do an online anniversary. You know, if we can do something where we can bring people out. We've had a couple of events here over the years where we had a little party and invited the community, and that's fun. I don't know that. And then at the 100th anniversary or the 115th anniversary or something of the city, must have been the 100th. We did a series where we were running old stories from the days when they were talking about incorporation and the debate. And, you know, because, you know, 100 years ago, there was a real debate whether Davis should be a city. And I think ultimately it was over fire protection.
If I recall correctly, it's because a large part of the town burned down and they said, you know, we need a better fire department.
Exactly. Basically. So we were running like on the anniversary week, all these 100-year-old stories, you know, sort of leading up to that. And so we might do something like that. You know, it's always fun to look back and go through the archives.
All righty. Well, thank you, Seb. Mm-hmm. We have been talking with Seb Onyate. He is the editor of the Davis Enterprise. I am Bill Buchanan, the host of Davisville on KDRT-LP. Seb, thanks again for appearing on the show today.
Oh, it was great to be here. Thanks for having me.
And everybody who's listening, thank you for listening. Mm-hmm.